Hello and welcome to Witchy Wellness Radio. I'm your host, Lauren Chalantani, women's holistic health coach and fellow recovering perfectionist. This podcast was created to show you that your body is not in the way. It is actually leading your way. Hello, hello, everybody. You are tuning in to episode 93, Total Sacred Health with Udo Erasmus. And before we jump into today's amazing episode, I wanted to let you guys know I'm so excited to tell you about our upcoming essential oil classes, intro to essential oil classes. Whether you guys are curious about doTERRA oils or you want a refresh on how to use the bottles you already have, you're going to love this class. My team hosts classes Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern and 8 p.m. Eastern for 1 hour. And we like to limit it to only 10 people per class. So head over to the show notes to the link to see the calendar for the next date and fill out the form and let us know what date you'd like to join. And when you join, immediately you receive our class link through an email with a class notes package to print and a little welcome gift from myself. And Witchy Wellness is also sponsored by Magnesium, Living the Good Life Naturally. If you guys are interested in learning more about magnesium, episode 73 with Kristen Bowen is the one to tune into. But if you are ready for up-leveling your magnesium game, head over to the link in the show notes below and make sure to use code WICHY, W-I-C-T-H-Y, to get 10% off of your purchase. Now back to our wonderful guest, Udo Erasmus. He is a pioneer of health and wellness industry. He actually created flaxseed oil and the healthy oil and fat movement. He is the co-founder of Udo's Choice supplement brand, a global leader in cutting-edge health products, selling tens of millions of bottles of healthy oils, probiotics, and digestive enzymes. However, Udo walked a difficult path before he's the man he is today. Being a child of war, Udo's life began with intense struggle, and as an adult, he got intense pesticide poisoning in 1980, leaving doctors at a loss for treatment. So he decided to take his health into his own hands and began researching. And his discoveries led him for a passion for finding the answers to life's biggest questions, which would hopefully one day bring him and the world peace. Today, he is an acclaimed speaker and author of many books, including Fats That Heal, Fats That Kill, which has sold over 250,000 copies. And he teaches at events hosted by Tony Robbins and Deepak Chopra, and has keynoted International Brain Health Conference and has traveled over to 30 countries to conduct thousands of live presentations and more. Amazing guy. You guys are going to love this episode. In this episode, you'll hear more of his backstory of a child of war to now finding peace and wanting to share it, how to do the same for others, the thirst of the heart, healing the ache deep inside of us all, total sacred health, living a life lit up from within, the power to process change, finding peace in chaotic times, reframing loneliness, making the most of life in isolation, the path to peace, nutrition essentials, everything you need to know about healthy oils and essential nutrition, and so much more. I hope you guys enjoy this amazing episode, number 93, Total Sacred Health with Udo Erasmus. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Witchy Wellness Radio. And again, this is your host, Lauren, and you are listening to the show that shows you your body is not in the way, but actually leading the way. And today, our guest is Udo Erasmus. He's the founder of Udo's Choice and author of the book Fats That Heal, Fats That Kill, which has sold over 250,000 copies. As an acclaimed author and speaker, Udo has an 8-step process that takes into consideration all of the elements of nature and human nature, including physical health, mental health, presence, awareness, life energy, and being in harmony with nature and humanity. Udo's background includes studies in biochemistry, genetics, biology, and nutrition, as well as a master's degree in consulting psychology. What a background. I'm so excited to dive into all those topics. Welcome to the show, Udo.
Yeah, I went to school way too long.
Well, now with the internet and everything, I feel like I only have my bachelor's, but you can keep learning and learning and learning and to no end anymore. So kudos to you. And that's what life's about to me.
I used to have to take a bus to go to the library, a bit like a half hour drive, and then go into the library and then go through the stacks and try to find the stuff I was looking for. And now I just have to put on a shirt and do an interview, right? That's exactly. All I got to do, right?
Yeah.
And not stand up if that's all I put on, right?
Yeah, hopefully.
It's so simple. I mean, it really has become so simple. Access to information. Now, some of it, of course, is wrong. Mm-hmm. And some of it is outdated. And the only thing that you can't get on the internet is yourself.
Ooh. I like that. Well, with that being said, I would love to hear, I mean, obviously lots of books and studying in your background, but I know you have so many passions, but what you're doing now is kind of bringing all those together. Mm-hmm. Please give us the more, you know, growth hero's journey story of that intro, how you got to do the work that you do today.
Oh my God. I had the good fortune. I had the good fortune to be born in a war. And that sounds crazy to say because it wasn't fun when I was in it. I was not yet three when we were fleeing out of Poland with the communists chasing us in tanks and trucks. And we're fleeing out of Poland on horse-drawn hay wagons, mostly women with small children trying to get out of the mess. And the communists were chasing us from behind, but that wasn't enough. We were on dirt road with no military presence, and the Allies were using us as target practice, shooting at us from planes. So we got caught into that whole mess. I don't remember that much other than terrified, anxious, didn't know what was safe, didn't feel safe, and that went on for years. Remember hunger, remember being told one thing and then being told the next thing, sort of like what's happening now, right? You know, you just learn. I just got toil trained and then I got told to go in my pants because we couldn't stop, right? That kind of stuff. And and then I got left behind because my mother found that the roads were less safe than going through the fields. But she had six kids with her, all six and under. She couldn't handle more than two, so she had to leave four behind. And I was one of them left behind. I ended up in an orphanage. And, you know, long story short, eventually we got reunited. Her sister actually went behind enemy lines to fetch us out, to dig us out, and brought us back, and then we got reunited. And then when I was 10, we left Europe and came to Canada. So that's sort of the short story of the long story. But I was very, very shy as a kid. I liked books because books were safe. You know, you can read about a war, but that's different from dodging bullets or hearing the noise or, you know, things falling over and things breaking, and, you know, it was different. So I did a lot of reading. And, you know, reading opened up all kinds of worlds for me. When I was 6 years old, and this is finally an answer to your question. When I was 6 years old, we were in Germany and people were arguing all the time. They were always arguing. They were always angry. And they were having these. And about stuff that I thought was really trivial. I was 6 years old, right? It's trivial to a six-year-old, must be pretty trivial. And it occurred to me, man, there has to be a way that people can live in harmony. And then, like the cocky little kid I am, because I don't know how complicated everything is, I said, I'm going to find out how. And that was my driver all my life. How can we live in harmony? Because I definitely don't want to live in a war. And even though it's a gift, because it rubbed my nose very early, that it's important to deliberately cultivate where you want to end up, in peace, in harmony, working together, you know, helping each other instead of hurting each other. And so I because I didn't know what to trust and I didn't know how things worked, I got into science to find out how things work. Then I got into biosciences to find out how creatures work. Then I got into psychology to find out how thinking works. Then I got into medicine because I wanted to know what health is, and I only learned about disease there. So I went back into biochemistry and genetics, because you learn health by studying normal creatures in normal situations, living normal lives, not in sick creatures in abnormal situations, living messed up lives. So I was actually getting a pretty good grounding in health by studying biology. And then I was still, there was still something missing, and I felt it like as an ache, like as a pain in my chest from the time I was 17 till the time I was 30, and I couldn't shake it. It was always there. I couldn't distract myself from it. I couldn't blame it on anybody, and I couldn't ignore it. It was just there all the time. It's like, what is this? What is this? What is this? And so I eventually left university and got into self-knowledge, because what I really needed to know was how I work. And that's basically is my background. And the goal was always, there must be a way that human beings can live together in harmony, and I'm going to find out how. And guess what? I know how. Doesn't mean everybody's going to follow it, but I know the story. It's like this. It's the human story. So that's my, you know, there's lots of other stuff, but that's kind of like been my focus.
Yeah. For me, I think so many of us, it's just kind of, you know, you want to save the world, you want to heal the world, but what you really realize is you have to heal it yourself first. Not heal yourself, but, you know, work on yourself first to be able to help others. Yeah, yeah. And understanding the self is a whole new ball game. And it's a constant, you know, I think we would all love, it would be this checklist of, okay, I worked through this issue, did this, did that, and now I'm a whole human. And it's this constant flow, try to getting to homeostasis, if you will, going back to kind of more biology. Yeah. How, when you went into that world of self-growth and self-knowledge, how does that incorporate, you know, what you do today? I know your latest and greatest project is your Total Sexy Health program, which I want to hear more about, but I know that those fundamental aspects are building blocks of this program.
Right. Well, I guess for my self-knowledge, when I was in the 60s, I did some psychedelics. And psychedelics are good for mind-blowing, mind-opening, looking at other options other than the ones that you're tracking and that you're basically addicted to, because we repeat habits and thoughts over and over and over and over again, and every time we repeat them, the track of them gets a little stronger in our mind. And psychedelics break open those tracks, that sometimes when people don't see options, so they go, something triggers it and they go into depression, something triggers it and they go into anxiety, something triggers it and they go into PTSD, something triggers it and they go into drug addiction. Right? And those are all tracks in our minds that we've run so many times that they're well-worn, and we don't even see that between the trigger and our response, there is actually a gap of time. And in that gap time, we have a choice. And we may, in fact, we have 1,000 choices. But sometimes it's so well tracked that every time the trigger happens, the response is so quick. Because the more we practice those responses, the quicker they get. We don't even see that there was a choice that we didn't make. We just do what we've always done, and it's called a habit, right? Or an addiction, right? And so what psychedelics do, and there's also a process called scrambling, where you break open the world of options in a particular situation. And if a person saw 100 options of how to respond to the trigger that led to a depression, they would be pretty likely not to choose the depression because it's not fun. It's just so well tracked that they don't see that they could respond a different way. And when you scramble that pattern, it's a particular way of doing it. When you scramble that pattern, the options show up. So next time you get the trigger, not only do you get this track, but you also go, maybe depending on what you did in the scramble, then you hear it like the singing chipmunks would have said it, or you hear it sexy like Marilyn Monroe might have said it, or you're dancing around and going like this and doing other stuff. So what you're doing is you're connecting, you're associating this trigger with a whole lot of things that you hadn't associated with before. And that's how you break open the world of choices, right? So that was really helpful because it took me, I was very tightly wound. I was very shy. If I had to do a talk in front of class or some demonstration in front of class, I'd find a reason not to go to school. I was that shy about being in front of a bunch of people. Now I be in front of them all the time. It's like, where was that? Where did that come from? And I was really tightly wound. And what happened to me through the use of psychedelics is like, it just got broken open. My world got broken open in a beautiful way. And then it was like, oh my God, the way I live is like just one of thousands of ways. And how do I want to live? And then I had to start thinking about how did I want to live? And then learning what I needed to learn and practicing what I needed to practice. And it just opened up the world for me from a war baby to a, you know, to no longer a war baby. Right. I mean, the war was still there and the lessons are still there. But if they define your activity, if they define your behavior, then you get stuck. So that got me unstuck. But then the other thing is I had peace on my mind all the time. I went into the peace movement until I realized it was an anti-war movement. I wasn't looking for anti-war. I was actually looking for peace. Peace as something, but I didn't really know what it was and where to find it. And there was this kid, he was 14 years old. I was 30 and he was 14. And he said one day, the peace you search for in the world is within you. And I can show you how to connect to that peace. And I didn't think a 14-year-old could teach me much because I've been around and I was arrogant, right? But then I thought, well, I am interested in peace. And if he can show me, just on the off chance that he can't show me, I wouldn't want to miss it. And if he can't, I'll just keep looking. So I was pretty dedicated to peace, even though I didn't know what it was. And then... So I took him up on it. Then he showed me a method. I thought the method was too simple. I mean, nothing was like, there was no faith involved here or trust involved, right? And he said, you know, just give it a fair chance. So I said, okay, I'll do it for 6 months because I said I would. And if I notice a difference, I'll keep doing it. And if I don't notice a difference, I'll just keep looking. So I was living with someone where she would get up and she'd be in the kitchen and I'd get up and I would say one sentence and immediately she would take the opposite view and we'd get into a super argument every day. It was every day. And so what I found out, and then I would eventually really get angry. And then I thought I had two choices. One is to hit her and the other one was to get out of the house. So I'd go out of the house, sit on a log, try to sit still, because that part of it was sitting still, right? To find the peace inside. So you got to sit still. So I'd sit on a log for 5 or 10 minutes because I couldn't sit still any longer than that. Within those 5 or 10 minutes, I would look at what we argued about and say, we argued about that? That's so ridiculous. That's so trivial. And then I started doing the practice before I walked into the kitchen. And I got to the point where whenever the conflict started, I would no longer respond to it. I wouldn't get triggered by it. See, I always got triggered. I always wanted her to agree with me. You know, I mean, it's that sounds really immature now, but that's where I was at the time. And so what happened is that the moment that she would talk, she would, you know, take the opposite view instead of then getting into an argument with her, I just took a breath. Right. So I didn't get into the conflict. And by the time the 6 months were up, I said, wow, this works. I thought it was way too simple. You know, we went to the moon. It was really complicated and we haven't got to peace yet. So peace must be really complicated. That's how I was thinking. And the truth is peace is super, 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 super simple. Because the core of our being, the core of our foundation and the core of the foundation of the universe are both perfect peace. That's the foundation of everything. When a person can't find their peace, they live without foundation. Right? And then, of course, you know, when you can't stay in the peace that is the core of your being, then you're going to go out to something else that is less peaceful. Right? And so that's kind of how it began. And then I got married and we had three kids and my marriage broke up and I was very upset and I got a job as a pesticide sprayer. And 3 years, real careless, got poisoned. Went to the doctor, what do you have for pesticide poisoning? Nothing. And that day, health became really interesting to me. And so I was looking at the fact that the body is made out of food, water, air, and light. It's always how it's been in nature. Every creature is made out of the stuff that it's living in, right? Food, water, air, and light. And I knew from studying biology that every year, 98% of my body, of the atoms in my body, are removed and replaced. So this thing, the body, is a major construction site. A half a pound of the body is replaced every day. So we're talking 98% and some parts many times over, like the lining of the digestive tract, every 4 days. So almost 100 times a year, the lining of your digestive tract is removed and replaced. And so the idea was, well, if 98% of my body is replaced every year, then if I'm sick and I want to get healthy, all I need to do is raise the standard of food, water, air, and light and maintain that standard for a year, and my body will have been rebuilt 98% to a higher standard. That is why healing is possible, because the body is a construction site. If the body wasn't always being constructed and rebuilt, then healing would not be possible. Oh, that was interesting. And then I got into the different parts of it. First with oils, because they were really confusing and they're the most sensitive nutrients. And we need them to give them the most care, but we actually give them the least care. We fry them. We fry oils, watch them turn into smoke and then eat it. And we don't do that with any other food. And this is the most sensitive. They're the most damaged. And as a result, damaged oils cause more health problems, more physical health problems than any other part of nutrition. And oils made with health in mind, not damaged, properly balanced, properly packaged, and all of that can bring the most physical benefits of any part of nutrition. And so I really got into that. Omega-3s were discovered as essential the year after I got poisoned, 1981. I got poisoned. And so then we developed Flaxo. We developed a method where oils are protected from light, from oxygen, from heat, while they're being made, filtered, settled, filled, stored, refrigerated in dark containers with a box around them to cut the light out, so that they maintain. If they're shipped more than 2 weeks, they're shipped refrigerated, like to Asia and Australia and every place. It literally, they go by boat, refrigerated, because these are like perishable goods, perishable foods. You have to give them the care they need if you expect them to unfold their health benefits in your body. So that's, you could see I could go on, but I think we probably should have a little dialogue too.
Oh, that's okay. It's okay. You are a man of many passions and I love that. I know a few years ago when I started researching oils myself, I had no idea, you know, a lot of people cook with olive oil, you know, before coconut oil was big, I would say 2000s, even the 90s, like when I was growing up, that was olive oil everywhere. And I had no idea the burning point was so low of olive oil. And it becomes very carcinogenic. I can't remember what that burning degree is, but you should not, obviously what you said, be baking and frying with all these oils, but that blew my mind.
In nature, the mandate is fresh, whole, raw, organic. Mm-hmm. Every creature in nature that eats food, eats it fresh, whole, raw, organic. Except a few scavengers, they eat it rotting, but still raw. And still organic in that sense. But fundamentally, nature is raw creatures eating raw creatures as food, turning one creature into another creature, into another creature, into another creature, right? So the entire system has that as its foundational mandate. When you cook the food, you lose some of the nutrients, you damage some of the nutrients, you kill the probiotics, you destroy the enzymes that do 60% of the digestion for you, you put more than twice the load on your digestive system, and you think that wouldn't catch up with you at some point? Well, yeah, it will. And so, you know, so the idea, if you want to set a higher standard, then go from where you are in the direction of fresh, whole, raw, organic. And when you do that, you build a better body. Just because you're aligning with nature's mandate, nature's rules.
Amazing. Now, do you, you're a big oil guy, but in terms of, I know there's fad diets out the wazoo. Are you primarily like plant-based raw type of diet? Is that what you suggest for rebuilding health or?
Yeah. Older I get, more I like veggies. I've always liked veggies. We had a big garden. We lived on a farm without electricity for part of my childhood. So we had a huge garden and we didn't have refrigeration. So we could only bring meat home once a week because we had a locker in town and my dad would go and get a hunk of meat and that was it. But we didn't have refrigeration. So we had to get it, unfreeze it, cook it and eat it. And that was it for the week. So we always ate a lot of vegetables. I think the research now is very clear. You want the longest life and the best health. You do it on a whole food, plant-based diet, as much as possible raw, as long as it's not contaminated. And it's also been shown that if you add dairy to it, you get shorter life and less good health. If you just add eggs to it, or just fish, or just any one of those animal products, they all decrease your health and decrease your lifespan. There's been so much research done on that now. It's also better for the environment. So there's lots of reasons why this actually makes more sense than what we're doing. And a lot of our information about food comes from the industries that are trying to hustle the products. So this is not based on what is true about how things work. This is about, you know, a lot of it is about who wants to sell what to whom, right? And then in marketing, you can make up all kinds of stories.
I always say follow the money is what I always say.
Yeah. And you know, when you think about even just like to take that on for just a second, follow the money. Everything's about money. but wait a minute, if you look at this planet, the treasure on this planet is not money, but life.
Mm-hmm.
And so money should be serving life. And when life starts to serve money, then you're heading down a pretty nasty slope. And that's just how it is. But we've become so used to, oh yeah, it's got to be for money, and you got to be, well, how am I going to pay my rent? You know, if you don't think money is important, I'm not saying money is not important. I'm just saying life is the treasure. And whether you're talking about trees or animals or microbes or human beings, you know, this planet is amazing because its surface is covered with life. Moon's not, Mars is not, Venus is not. Nothing, no other planet in our galaxy, not our galaxy, in our solar system is, right? And that should be that, you know, and yeah, and then here we are, here I am. Maybe I get 100 years in a human body, always turning over, but in 100 years, maybe if I'm lucky. For 4 billion years before that, I didn't exist. Actually, for 14 billion years before that, I didn't exist. And then on the other side, after my 100 years are up, for another 4 billion years, I won't exist until the sun incinerates itself and the entire planet and basically all life on the planet disappears. So talk about a temporary gift and talk about doing what you can to fully experience the amazingness of a bunch of water, a bunch of air, a bunch of light, and a bunch of dirt, dust, being mixed up together into this, into that, into what you are, right? Into 8 billion people and into 2.5 trillion trees, down 75% from the 10 trillion that were here 10,000 years ago. You know, you start to look at that and it's, oh my God. And it's all run by sunlight or solar energy, right? The energy goes into leaves and it excites electrons. They become reactive. They react with electrons from other atoms. They form bonds between them. Now you got a molecule. The solar energy is stored in that bond. That molecule becomes our food. We eat the molecule. We break down we break it down, and the sun, the solar energy is released, and that's what we live on. That is our life. So here you are sunshine, but you're not my only sunshine, but you are sunshine. So am I. So are all the other people. So is the energy in the wood and the plants. So the sunshine, all of this biomass it's almost like a storage container for sunlight or for sunshine or for solar energy. And everything that moves and all of the energy, everything that takes place here, all of the work and all of that is all driven by solar energy. Right?
Yeah. That's a beautiful way to
look at it. That solar energy, you know, that's our life. Now, we're not even who we think we are. Because if I would point at you and say, hey, whose body is that? What would you say?
I would want to say my body, but I know it's not. I'm just part of my environment.
Okay, but why would you not want to say it's your body? That's what everybody would say. That's what most people would say. Whose body is that? This is my body.
Well, I think that it's a vessel that holds my spirit, my mind right now, but I know that,
right,
like you just said, after I die, I'm going to become part of the earth again and part of that solar process we just talked about.
So in all of that, who are you?
I'm God. I think of the Rumi quote, you are not just one drop in the ocean, but you are the entire ocean, one drop. That's, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe that's a little different than the mass thinks, but you know, when I am in a program, like you were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. where I get the trigger response, yeah, I might say it's my body, and I might, mm-hmm. you know, think about it at this very granular tunnel vision. But when mm-hmm. I have that bigger bird's eye perspective, just like you were discussing, then you start to see that the peace is there.
The reason why I ask that is that most people, when you ask them, whose body is that? They would say, well, that's my body. And they do it just without thinking. It's just like, that's my body. Everybody knows this is my body. But you know what? If you told me, or if I told you, this is my body, I've just told you that I'm not the body. Right? If this is my body, I'm the owner of the body. The body is my property. So then the question is, well, who am I if I'm the owner of the body? Who is the owner of the body? This is like, I mean, we busted in one sentence.
Oh, yeah.
Completely busted ourselves, right? So who am I as owner of the body? Well, I am life. Because life in me is omnipresent, everywhere present, omniscient, knows everything because it weighs nothing, but it runs everything, right? Using a genetic program that it built over long times, right? Runs everything. So it's omnipotent, all power in me, and it knows everything because you have to know how to run this thing in order to run it, right? Omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient. That's the definition of God. So now we're talking about life is solar energy, and solar energy is God. What's the difference? Well, solar energy is how scientists describe it from the outside. It goes 186 miles a second and 186,000 miles a second, you know, and it radiates and it's wave and it's bullet and, you know, all the science stuff. That's from the outside. But when you sit down and get really still and shut off all of your distractions, and you bring your awareness into the space that your body occupies, in that space, if you pay attention, in that darkness within you, you can find light. If you go deep enough, if you sit still enough, you can hear sound. You can feel unconditional love. You can even taste it. So how well do you know yourself as life? And in order to go there, you have to sit still. So I say, okay, sit still. See how still you can become. Like in hide and seek, you know, somebody's looking for you and you hold your breath in. And you're like really present. And not a peep, right? So really still and see how deep you can go into that stillness and see how long you can stay there. It's not all that long because, you know, if you get, okay, I'm all good and I'm totally still, I'm just going to stay here. And then the next thing you know, you got to go pee, right? It's not easy to do this. And then you want to breathe lightly. As lightly as you can. So don't drag your breath through your throat, but just like as quietly as possible. And then slowly as possible. And while you're doing that, what can you observe within the space your body occupies? Light, sound, feeling, taste. That's who you are. Because your senses monitor energy. They monitor change and they monitor energy. When you look on the outside, you know, what you see is movement. You see energy. You see color, that's energy. You see shapes, that's energy. You hear sounds, that's energy. You feel feelings. That's feelings. That's energy. So we can see outside through our senses. We see energy. But energy is just as visible and just as hearable and just as feelable inside as it is outside. And mostly we miss that because we don't bring our awareness there to where that is, to where you can discover the magnificence of your existence. Is that cool?
Oh, yeah. I've got 1,000 different questions to follow up on this one. I so agree with that. And I love how your perspective of holistic health, mind, body, and soul, and mm-hmm. spirit. For me, that's very key because mm-hmm. I came into this world the opposite of you. I was very health, you know, eat all of the kale, all the greens, you know, work out and drink the purified water. But I didn't have my mind right or my soul right. I didn't find that stillness. And although eating healthy and moving your body will heal a lot, what I realized is there was that missing component that I've been searching for, that I was trying to eat healthy and work out, you know, like you mm-hmm. said, that deep ache or thirst of the heart that you were speaking of. Mm-hmm. And it's the combination of those two, you know, using that practice you just spoke of before you eat. In our household, we take at least 5 silent breaths before we eat mm-hmm. and we just open our hearts. And I sometimes I'll just open my heart and just sit there, or I'll go through every single person, or even, you know, the sunlight that grew my food, or, you know, the farmer that picked my food, or the grocery store worker, or, you know, the farmer's market, whatever. And, you know, that combination between that physical health and that spiritual, and that connection is the nervous system. And for me, researching that rest and restore was huge because I had a lot of digestion issues. Mm-hmm. And that was directly tied to, you know, knowing myself and finding that peace inside. And I want to talk about next, tied into this, you know, the power to process change, because we're going through a lot of chaotic times right now. And this is a perfect, and any time's perfect, but right now is perfect because we are seeing our own program slap us across the face left and right because you can't run. We're all at home or, you know, whatever. And it's been a year of self-growth for me, but a lot of stuff that either I was avoiding or I didn't think I had to deal with. But I'm glad it came up. It wasn't beautiful at all, really. But, you know, it was things that you were like, oh, I'm better for that now. And I love your philosophy, but I would love to hear, you know, what we talked about before, but, you know, your take on this, finding this beautiful peace in yourself during this chaotic time.
Right. Okay. So because I've been doing this for almost 50 years, I've become pretty good at it. Because the first time you sit down and you try to bring your awareness inside, you probably don't know what the hell you're doing. You don't know what it looks like. You don't know, you don't remember feeling it before. Well, maybe you do. What do you do? What is the formula? And in some ways, there's not a formula, but it has to be a heart's desire. That's what the thirst of the heart is. The ache of the heart to feel whole. And that has a story behind it. I say to people when they in the lockdowns, look, if you can't go outside, go inside. There's nothing. There is no wall between you and going inside. Nobody can put a wall there. Not your government, not the rules, not anything. Because that's open to you if you take your focus in that direction, in the inward direction, and then discover how incredibly beautiful your life is, no matter what's going on around you, no matter what kind of things you can't do that you used to be able to do, right? So this has a story. When you were in your mother's womb, anybody, when we were in our mother's womb, there was nothing to do. There was nowhere to go. Hey, we were in lockdown. There was nothing to, it just occurred to me. There was nothing to do. There was nowhere to go. Everything was taken care of. All the basics were taken care of. And it was relatively safe. So in that time inside, we were hanging off a little cord in a little tank. I call it the Buddha tank. And we were hanging out. So where was our focus? Because focus is everything. Where was our focus? Well, there was no place to go, nothing to do. There was nothing we had to attend to. So our focus was at rest, inside, in its source, within us in life. And when our awareness is there, part of what's present is light, enlightened or enlightened, because life is light. One of the aspects, one of the properties of life is light. The life is there, right? Fills our body. It's happening in the tank, mummy's tank. But we have our own life. We have our own focus of life already from conception. So we were present inside in our focus and absent outside. And we were in a Buddha state. Everybody who has already been in the Buddha state or the Christ state or whatever you call that holy of holiest sacred things. Everybody was in it. And they have lots of names for it, you know. But the name is not important. The experience is important. So here we were hanging out. And then something happened. We got pushed out of the Buddha tank. And now it's cold, you know, and we get wet. And we got to cry for our milk. And, you know, we got to let somebody know that we need something. And so we begin to learn to know the world. And we need that to survive for the time that we have here. And so in that process, our focus of awareness that began inside automatically goes out through our senses into the world. And we go from being present inside, absent outside, to be present outside, disconnected inside. And that's where heartache or thirst of the heart or this uneasiness or restlessness or yearning, longing, isolation, separation, loss, grief, restlessness. I mean, I've got 10 pages of words that we call this uneasy feeling in our chest. That's the feeling, not because my grandma died or my girlfriend dumped me, or something that I put value to ended. That's the trigger. But what I feel is my heart. Actually, what I feel is my disconnection. And the discontent and maybe the destructiveness that comes from that. So that's what I feel. And what that actually is my heart calling my awareness to come back home inside to its source in life. And guess what I find when I go there? That's where peace lives. That's where unconditional peace lives. It is a state of being within every human being, mostly undiscovered because mostly unexplored. Imagine if 8 billion people knew that and spent the time they need to spend being quiet to reconnect to that. That's where our wholeness lives. That's where you know, this, when, you know, that's nothing on the outside that we accomplish will ever make us feel whole. We'll get 3 days of, yay, I did it. You know, and sometimes we busted our butt for years to accomplish what we accomplished. And after the 3 days of celebration are over, the restlessness is back. I didn't do it. Oh, my God. I should have tried for $10 million instead of $1 million. Oh, should have been a different woman. Oh, maybe my goal was the wrong goal. Maybe I tried in the wrong direction. So let me change direction. Let me do something else. And there's always this hope that what we do on the outside will get us feeling whole on the inside. Never gonna happen. If the disconnect is on the inside, the reconnect has to also be on the inside, because you have to connect where the connection needs to be connected, right? And so And this uneasy feeling in our chest will not leave us alone. Will continue to nag us until we take it on and until we actually come home to ourselves. Now, if we knew that from our experience, not just as a nice story this old guy tells, right? But if you know it if we know it from our own experience, both the ache, which is the starting point for the journey home, and just behind it, the home that is calling us to come to. When we know that, everything changes. Instead of me always saying, oh, what can I do that'll get me taken care of? It's like, no, I'm taken care of. I know how to go there. If I don't feel taken care of, I know where I need to go to feel taken care of. My taken care of lives here. And so whenever I don't feel taken care of, all I need to do is go here because that's where it lives. And it's always there when I go there. And it's always been there when I went there. And it was always there even when I didn't look there. But then I didn't know. Right? So, when I started feeling cared for, in fact, I call it unconditionally loved. Life unconditionally loves my body. Life as the owner and as runs everything, unconditionally loves my body. When I feel taken care of, when I'm in peace, when I feel whole, then it's like, okay, I'm taken care of now. Now what do? Wow, it's not about me anymore. Where can I help? What needs to be done around here? How can I make the biggest splash for good that I can make in one body, in one lifetime? How big can I think? Because, you know, thinking small takes just as much effort as thinking big. And now it's not like, oh, I'm only going to do this because I think maybe something will come out of it for me that will like make my life a little better. My life is better. My life is, I'm there. I have access to it now. Oh my God. Oh my God. For 13 years, I've ached and ached and ached and ached. Oh my God. I can go there now. And then I say, okay, what is the biggest thing that needs to be done that nobody's doing because it's too hard, you know, or they don't see what's in it for them? That's what I'm going to do. And guess what? It'll be a bigger business and it'll be more money and it'll be better positive results for people. And until I feel whole, I will not do what needs to be done. Talking about, you know, trying to fix the world, but first fixing yourself. We will not do what needs to be done for the environment until we feel whole. Or in politics, what needs to be done until we feel whole. Or in relationships, what needs to be done until we feel whole. Or for health, what needs to be done until we feel whole. So this is job one. If life has a purpose, the number one purpose for every human being is to be present in, fully present in all of their being and their surroundings and enjoy fully what an incredible thing that is to be fully present. And what is there? Well, you want to be internally aware. That's where the peace lives. As a state of being. So this is not a peace that comes when you do this, this, and this, and this. This is peace that is there that you can feel because it is in you. You have to do nothing except you bring your awareness to it. That's the only requirement, right? So that's number one is internal awareness or peace. Number two is unconditional love. That's in touch with the energy that is life, that takes care of everything in your body. Number three is inspired creativity. That's the shine of the unconditional love into the world. Number four is the physical body. That's what everybody talks about when they talk about health. So we're talking food, water, air, and light. We're talking about fitness or activity. And we're talking about detox, not eating poison, and getting rest and sleep and healing you know, and making sure digestion works. We use digestive enzymes and probiotics for that. Helps a lot because we've messed our food up so much. So that's number four. Number five is survival smarts. That's about protecting yourself, you know, like heat and cold, wild animals, crazy people, right? Or destructive people, because they're confused. And then they think somehow that if they do a certain destructive thing, somehow they will feel better. It's all in the drive of trying to feel whole again. All the craziest stuff that's going on. I'm talking about terrorism and insurrections and like everything that people do that's really crazy is a desperate attempt to try to feel whole. But of course, you don't get whole doing destructive things outside or constructive things outside. You get whole by coming home, right? So, so that's number five. That's basically protection and survival for a short time. So you don't want to take it too seriously because you will not survive. Your body will not survive eventually. So don't put all your eggs in the survival basket because that's not going to work. You need to be in touch with the peace and the love that are formless, unconditional, and indestructible. You can't destroy something that has no form. And you got that in you, and that is your essence. So then the next one is social group. People affect your health. In fact, when we were kids, we would get mad at other kids in the schoolyard, and we'd yell at them, "You make me sick!" Right? So even as kids, we knew that other people affect our health. And then there's environment, nature, basically, planet, solar system, moon, sun, you know, all of nature. That's number seven. And number eight is what I call the big picture, infinite awareness. When you go inside into the core of your being and you discover the peace that's there and you feel you are in that peace, you notice that that peace does not stop where your body stops. That peace, you are a center for a peace that goes all the way out to infinity. And part of what we need to come to terms with in that arena is that here I am in a terminal condition called the body. No matter how healthy I am and how many raw carrots I eat, you know, this is still a terminal condition. The body is a terminal condition, and it's unfolding its cycle of physical existence with all of this other stuff attached to it in an infinite universe. And not being afraid of the death of the body, because that's guaranteed. And it's okay. Because because we're not just the body. Something survives death. Energy survives death. Awareness survives death. Even inspiration survives death. And the big picture survives the death of this little critter that I am, right? And so, you know, what is the best way to live? Fully present in all of my being and my surroundings at the same time. And then I can literally flow into and flow out of and flow through all the things that happen until the body goes down. But it'll be fun. And I won't be always wondering where it's coming from and why I can't find it. Because I am what I'm looking for. And the master, you know, the master, we talk about these great masters, the life energy that is the master of your body. And that master is also where all the masters lived in touch with, and why they were so wise and why they were so loving and why they, you know, why they were so revered. Because something in all of us wants to be in touch with that master in us. And if we can't find it in us, then we're going to find it somewhere on the outside. And if a real master comes, then that master will not say, "Yeah, follow me and worship me and, you know, like, give me your money," and whatever you could say. It would say, "No, no, no, no. Don't worship in me the thing that is your master inside of you that runs your show. So be grateful into your heart, because I don't need your gratitude, because I have that myself too. And it's not different for 8 billion people. They all have the master living within them, whether they are a believer or a not believer. We're just talking about facts. We're just talking about existence. We're talking about what is. Every human being has that master inside of them. And by the way, that master is also the energy that runs the tree and is also the energy that runs the weeds and that runs the animals. But what happened to us that's different? The trees, they're just hanging out in their Buddha space. They never went anywhere. The animals go out and come back into their body. And what we do is we go out to get to know the world, and then we don't come back into our heart, we actually come into our mind. And then we live a virtual life in our head instead of living a real life in presence in the space we occupy. Right? So for human beings, the return journey to ourselves has to be a deliberate journey, because we go out automatically when things change on the outside, because we have to assess them. Is this friend or is this foe or is it irrelevant? And we have to do that pretty quick. And then we have to act on the assessment we've made. That's important for survival. But there's nothing inside that's going, hey, look at me, look at me, look at how incredible I am inside. Nothing like that inside. It's peaceful there. It's quiet there. It's like baby sleeping in a warm blanket quiet, right? It's just like so taken care of quiet. So there's nothing that will drag us back, our awareness back inside. And as close as we get is to the ache that's calling us home. And then when we sit with the ache, this is what I recommend people do. If your heart aches, sit with it and feel it. Be with it. Hang out with it. Don't judge it. Just feel it. Might be intense. Maybe you'll cry. I don't know. Or maybe it'll just ache and could be pretty intense. Won't hurt you. Won't kill you. Accept it. Embrace it. Maybe even be grateful for it, because it's your call to come home to what you're looking for. And what you're looking for is like a hair's breadth deeper than that ache in your heart. You're so close. You're almost there. Just like, And when we do that, everything's good. In that place, there's no fear. You can't, nothing that has no form has fear. The fear is always about the body. Oh, the body could be destroyed. Oh, my belief system could be destroyed. My house could be destroyed, right? So everything that is formed and temporary has fear attached to it, because it could break down. And you don't know when, and you don't know how, and it might surprise you, and it might be a flood, might be a lightning, it might be an asteroid, and if you get anxious, then you start tripping on all the what ifs about that. But something in you is sitting in the middle of all this impermanent stuff is indestructible. So if you take your sense of yourself from what is indestructible and formless and eternal in you, there's a comfort and a peace and a sureness in that you cannot possibly ever get from your body, no matter how well you eat and how well you work out and what an awesome body you have because of your effort. And that body will still get wrinkles and will still get old and will still eventually check out.
Yeah, that's the cycle of life. And I think you beautifully described that state of being, that God-given, I'm not God-given, you, that is where God exists. And I have had deep moments in those spaces mm-hmm. where I've never felt so much love, and equally have not felt so much love for everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Just,
oh, yeah. So because why is that?
Yeah.
See, if I'm in this peace in the core of my being, because I've brought my awareness home inside as deep as I can, right? Then I look around and I say, oh my God, peace has always been everywhere already. It's not like I need to create it. It's not like I need to find it somewhere. It's everywhere. But only peace knows that. So when somebody says, I don't see peace everywhere, then it's because it's not the peace in them that's looking. Because our perceptions are formed by our state of being. So if I'm in peace, I see peace everywhere. And then I live into a peaceful world. And that's different than if I'm angry. See, if I'm angry, then I'll look at that same world that is filled top to, you know, stem to stern with peace. And I'll see enemies. Oh my God. I'll see enemies, and I'll create enemies if there aren't any, just because I'm angry. And then my perception creates enemies. And then I start figuring out whether I should fight or run and how I should overcome these enemies. And I will create a world of enemies just so, because I'm angry, so that I have some enemies out there to fight. I have to create them.
Yep. Yeah. You create your own reality.
And it's automatic. And it's automatic from my state of being or my state of emotions. Of course, anger is a state of emotion. Peace is a state of being. The difference is emotions have mental content and states of being don't. Mm-hmm. Peace, there's a peace without any other stuff. That's why it's not conditional. You know, all your mental stuff is conditions, right? Yep. And so, and then there could be another person sitting in the same place where peace, one person sees peace everywhere, another person sees enemy. This person's afraid. This person's going to look at that same world and say, danger. Oh my God, there's danger. So that person who's afraid will imagine danger into being.
Mm-hmm.
And then will live into that world in a self-protective way, hiding or building barriers or whatever is their way of dealing with danger. In the same world that the other person sees nothing but peace and bliss and incredible.
Yep. And that's what
you said triggered that. And that's like important understanding. And our expression into the world is a direct, automatic outcome of our state, of the state of being that we experience. And there's like thousands of states of beings and states of emotions. Every one of them is possible for every human being. Then a question becomes, well, which one do you want? What do you think would be the absolute best way to live your life? And that depends to some extent on your conditioning. But if you really could look deeply into the nature of being and come out with that, peace would be pretty high on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Unconditional love would be very high on the list. Joy, contentment, you know, feeling rich, feeling whole, feeling one, feeling grateful. Right? Those would all be high on the list because they feel better. there are many. These states of being feel better than most of the emotional states that we wrestle with.
I totally agree. And for me, I had to battle with the judgment of the emotional state that I was in,
mm-hmm.
and shoulding over, I should be happier. you know, or, you know, I should everywhere. Yeah. You know, I shouldn't be angry.
Yeah, in psychology, we're told to stop shooting on ourselves.
Yep, stop shooting. That's what I say. Stop shooting all over yourself, Lauren. You're doing it again. But when you can let go and just realize, just like you said, those rough, you know, that aching of the heart, those states of being, those fleeting feelings are all leading us back, saying, you know, knocking on my door. Hello, here's the messenger. Please don't shoot the messenger. I'm just reminding you.
Yeah.
Time to go back home.
Yeah, and the other thing is that when you're troubled, when you're dealing with emotions, and you know, we have triggers and we have brain tracts that we find ourselves easy to go down. But it's important to remember, no matter how crazy it gets, and no matter how difficult it is, and no matter what you're feeling, at the same time you're feeling all that, and you don't want to suppress it. You want to feel what you feel. But at the same time you're feeling that, you also got this peace inside of you. And you also have this unconditional love inside of you. At least be fair and give them equal, you know, give them equal time. Right? And then you can literally go from one to another. You know, with time, you become very good at going wherever you want to go. And then more and more, you know, you find that the better states of being feel better, make you more effective, you make you more loving and loved. You know, they work better for you than anything else. And more with time, you say, well, I just got triggered by that. Well, that was kind of stupid. And you start to disconnect the triggers that are taking you to places. And you do it deliberately. You see it and you say, oh, I'm doing that. Well, I don't have to do that. Well, next time I won't do it. And then the next time it comes, you get triggered again. But you get to a point when you start working with it that you're more and more likely to not get triggered. And at a point will come when you see what's happening. You see that used to trigger you and you decide not to trigger yourself. And then you have, once you've broken it once, it becomes easier to break it again and break it again and break it again. And one day there'll be that trigger and you won't even notice.
Mm-hmm.
It'll do nothing to you because you've gone elsewhere in your being, because you decided you like a different state of being better than getting triggered. And it's a process. I mean, it's a process. It's, we learn as we go and we are all works in progress.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I just looked at the clock and I am blown away. I would love to keep talking, but I'm going to wrap up the show for today. Okay. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing that heart space and that peace with all of us and reminding us, like you said, we've all been there. That's the Buddhist state in the womb, whatever you want to call it. It's just reminding us how to get back home. And it's a lot simpler than we think it should, quote unquote, be. Thank you again so much for coming on the show. And we end the show every episode. Thank you for coming on the show. I know myself and so many of the listeners are going to be so grateful for this simple, but very, very powerful and impactful and direct wisdom that you shared with us today. And how may we, the listeners, be of service as an act of gratitude in return, because we're going to feel so whole from this episode and, you know, deploying all those just simple tricks that we want to give. How can we give in return for you today?
Well, you know, there's 8 billion people that I would wish could live in that space. Many of them have never heard. Everybody who's been listening, and you're all on my team. Nobody gets kicked off the team. The deeper you go in your own magnificence, the more you're doing for me. Not just for yourself, but also for me. Because this is the transformation of the world. This is the transformation. To be fully present in the mastery that life is, and live your life from that mastery, and bringing that mastery to expression. Imagine 8 billion people. So I don't know how many people are on this show, but every one of you, you know, what the best thing you can do for me is go deeper into yourself. And by the way, what I'm doing for you, the deeper I go into myself, the better that is for you. So we're all on the same track. We all got the same job. Job one.
Awesome. Yep. And I just thought I think the etymology of meditation or meditate is like to know thyself.
To move to the center. Thyself was so Socrates, he didn't say know everything but thyself. That's how we've been living. But he said, know thyself. Yeah. Why did he say know thyself? He said, because the unexamined life is not worth living. Yeah, if you're not present in your magnificence and you feel like crap, so what a shame. What a shame.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I know I'm going to get off this show and I'm going to go soak into my own magnificence.
Do it.
It's just a breath away. So thank you again for coming on the show. Right. It was a beautiful pleasure.
Thanks, Lauren. Yeah, you're awesome.
And remember, open up, surrender, trust, and let your body lead the way.